Welcome to Alabama Short Stories, when you're a little behind on your Alabama history. I'm your host, Sean Wright. I was warming up for a soccer game when local legend and photographer Spider Martin walked up to say hello and ask for a favor. In his uniquely Hueytown accent, he said, "Would you guys take it easy on me today? I separated my shoulder last week." And my first thought was maybe he shouldn't be out here today. Spider was easily a foot shorter and 24 years older than I was. I'm not sure the exact year, but I was probably 35 years old at the time, making him 59. Almost the same age I am today. And I retired from playing 20 years ago. If you know anything about Sunday Adult League soccer, it's made up of players of questionable talent and fitness, but balanced by loads of enthusiasm. As the game started, I didn't pay much attention to Spider as he ran around with his arm in a sling. During one tense moment in the game in front of our goal, the ball flew toward the player's scrum and a blur flew past me in the air. The ball was cleared away and I looked down at Spider Martin, crumpled on the ground in the goal. He forgot about the dislocated shoulder and his enthusiasm to score a goal. When I think about Spider Martin and his legacy these days, I always think back to that moment when Spider, the old man he was, threw caution to the wind and went for the win despite the chance of injury and danger. I first met Spider Martin in the early 1970s on an advertising junket. My father worked for Lucky and Forney Advertising, and they had the State of Alabama Tourism account. They needed photos of Gulf State Park and the USS Alabama Mobile and hired Spider Martin as the photographer. Not missing a chance at a paid-for vacation, both families went along and became unpaid models in exchange. A win-win for everyone. From that time on, Spider came in and out of my life. He was a commercial photographer and man about town. I would see him in Five Point South, ad club meetings, photo shoots, and local festivals. I enjoyed the time I could sit with him, and he would tell me stories about his time documenting the civil rights movement. Spider was a great commercial photographer. He stood out in a town with a stable of great commercial photographers. A lot I've had the opportunity to work with. For better or worse, he will always be known for his work before shilling for art directors and corporate clients. He was on the front lines documenting the civil rights movement in Alabama. James Spider Martin was born in Fairfield on April 1, 1939. He suffered from bouts of infantile pneumonia, which stunted his growth. He grew to be 5 feet 2 inches tall and 125 pounds. He grew up in Wylam, an enclave of European immigrants whose family had moved to work in the steel mills near Inslee and Fairfield. He grew up listening to Italian being spoken, and his grandmother spoke Gaelic. To hear him tell it, he was a mischievous child in school, highlighted by the time he let loose a bull in the hallway at Inslee High School. It was his version of the running of the bulls. He was expelled from the Birmingham City School System for this prank. Now, between the running of the bull and being expelled, his teacher sent him on an errand, and the class applauded as he left the room. Now, the family moved to nearby Hueytown so Spider could attend high school outside of the Birmingham school system. The move was a culture shock for Spider, who was used to a community of outsiders who tended to get along. Hueytown in the 1950s was a complete shock for Spider. The outright racism of fellow students was a shock to him. It was a world apart from Wylam, even though it was just a few miles away. Even though he was small in stature, he played football for the Hueytown Golden Gophers, and based on my experience playing soccer against him, I'm sure he held his own. He earned his nickname when a reporter said he moved like a spider during one of his touchdown runs. After graduating from Hueytown, he studied art at Jacksonville State, the University of Alabama, and UAB. Spider fell into photography when he found out that a client would pay more for photos of a project he was working on than the illustrations he was commissioned for. Soon after, he won first place in a photo contest sponsored by the Birmingham Post-Herald. Winning this award led to him being hired at the Birmingham News. He was the youngest photographer on staff. On February 18, 1965, a nighttime protest was taking place in Marion, Alabama. It was a peaceful march around the town square, until Alabama State troopers and local law enforcement arrived with billy clubs to stop the protest. Protesters went to Max Cafe just off the square and were followed by the troopers. A skirmish broke out. Jimmy Lee Jackson was trying to protect his mother and grandfather, but was beaten and fatally shot by a trooper. He died 8 days later. The trooper, James Fowler, would not be convicted until 2010, 45 years later. In 1998, playwright Hubert Grissom Jr. interviewed Spider for a book that was never published, and with his permission, I'm retelling some of those stories, starting with his time in Marion. Around midnight after Jimmie Lee Jackson was shot, the chief photographer from the Birmingham News called Spider with orders to go to Marion to shoot photos. No one else wanted to go, but Spider was the newest and youngest on staff, so he was assigned the job. He loaded up his Plymouth Valiant with camera equipment and a couple of pistols under the seat, just in case. The ride took a little more than an hour, and when he got there, he parked his car. It was still dark, but he could see the state troopers with their clubs, and broken glass was everywhere. Spider had been told that he needed to get photos of NBC newsman Richard Valeriani, who had been beaten and was in the hospital. State troopers barricaded the hospital, so he slipped in a side door. And inside, he was spotted by a deputy. He turned to run, and when he went around the corner, a black cleaning woman grabbed him and hit him in her supply closet. She covered for him and sent the deputy in another direction. She opened the door and told Spider, "You better leave. They shot Jimmie Jackson and beat up a white TV fella tonight." It wouldn't be the last time a stranger saved Spider from the police. Spider found Valeriani in room 110, in bed with his head wrapped in bandages. Valeriani said, "Tell somebody out there in the real world to save me." Spider took his picture and snuck out of the hospital. Back out on the street, Spider was confronted by troopers who wanted to know what he was doing on the street at 3 a.m. He turned on the country accent and talked about being from Hueytown and that the Birmingham News sent him down and he was looking for a hotel. They pointed him to the only hotel in town. He was uneasy about being in the hotel and tried to make calls to the news with no luck. He snuck out and found a telephone booth. While he was on the call with Tom Self, the chief photographer, lights from a car pierced the phone booth, and the car started to push the booth over with Spider inside. The booth hit the ground. Spider kicked out the glass and ran to his car. He was chased until Spider lost them, and he sought refuge on the Judson College campus. The following day, a friendly trooper found him. He brought him donuts and coffee. Now, why the change in demeanor? It seems that Self was so disturbed by the sound of Spider being run over by Marion's finest that he called S. Vincent Townsend, general manager of the Birmingham News, who in turn called Nicholas Katzenbach, U.S. Attorney General, who in turn got George Wallace out of bed and threatened to send in federal troops if anything happened to Spider. This night in Marion was Spider's first introduction to documenting the civil rights movement in Alabama, but it wouldn't be his last. Just a few weeks later, he would be in Selma. There was talk about protesters taking Jimmie Lee Jackson's body to the Capitol steps. This trip to the Capitol is where the idea of a march to Montgomery started. Small marches begin with a larger march planned for March 7th that would cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Governor George C. Wallace proclaimed, "Such a march cannot and will not be tolerated." Spider showed up in Selma with his camera hanging around his neck, ready to document the march. He had struck up a conversation with the trooper who was a camera buff. The trooper warned Spider that the governor had told them to get Spider, and by get, he meant to use violence. Spider was always out front of the march, walking backwards and taking photos. When he reached the top of the Edmund Pettus Bridge, he looked to the other side and could see what was waiting for the marchers. There were men mounted on horses, the Dallas County Posse, with billy clubs and guns. The state troopers had on hard hats and gas masks, not to mention billy clubs and tear gas guns. When the marchers got to the other side of the bridge, Major McLeod of the Alabama State Troopers gave the marchers 60 seconds to disperse. When they didn't, one trooper went to the closest marcher and pushed him in the chest. At that point, the troopers set on the marchers like a pack of dogs. They surged forward, pushing, beating, and tear gassing anyone they could reach. Marchers were beaten back across the bridge. John Lewis, a future senator from Georgia and the current SNCC organizer, was at the front of the marchers. He was hit on the head and beaten. And if you can see this picture in your mind, you may see the photo that Spider Martin took at the time. The tear gas was thick, and Spider, to the side of the crowd, was on his knees trying to clear his eyes when, out of nowhere, a trooper swung his billy club, which glanced off the camera and still hit Spider in the head. Realizing he wasn't a black marcher, he said, "Excuse me, I thought you was a black person," and he didn't say black person. Regaining his vision, Spider took a picture of the unconscious Amelia Boynton on the ground as a trooper looked on. He made his way over the bridge, taking photos of victims lying on the road, and returned to Brown Chapel Church, where the march had started. If you're lucky enough to have listened to Spider tell his stories about his time in Selma, then you heard this one. It's his favorite story. Spider knew he was a target of everyone swinging a billy club that day. He noticed the troopers giving him dirty looks like they were about to take their attention off the marchers and come after him. He kept shooting pictures. He took a picture of a heavily jowled Dallas County deputy holding a tear gas launcher and then took off running. Now, if you look through Spider's photos, it's probably the one where a deputy is wearing an army helmet painted white with a Confederate battle flag on the side. A lady in the housing projects across the street saw him running and she hollered, "You better get inside here, they're going to kill you." Spider ran in and she shut the door. The first thing that hit him after he calmed down was the smell of turnip greens stewing on the stove. He sat down and she served him cornbread, turnip greens, black-eyed peas, and a glass of iced tea. A little bit of heaven when right outside the door was the smell of tear gas, the chaos, and who knows how many law enforcement officers looking for a pint-sized photographer who disappeared in a housing project. While inside, Selma Public Safety Director Wilson Baker was so fed up with the damage the Dallas County Posse was doing to the marchers that he ordered Sheriff Jim Clark to call them off. It was too little too late, as dozens of marchers were hurt, with over 50 receiving emergency treatment and at least 17 hospitalized. It was indeed a bloody Sunday. After the assault, a brief service was held at Brown Chapel, and when John Lewis started to speak, he began to see double. Lewis was sent to the hospital with a concussion. The scenes that Spider and other photographers on the scene sent out to the rest of the world made a huge impact. For the next month, marchers assembled and prepared for a march to Montgomery. On March 9th, the Reverend James Reeb, a white clergyman from Boston, was in town in support of the protesters. He was assaulted outside a diner and died 2 days later in Birmingham. On March 15th, President Johnson gave a speech supporting the Voting Rights Act. And on March 17th, Judge Johnson cleared the way for the march, ordering Wallace and other officials from harassing and threatening marches. President Johnson made Wallace ask for federal protection for the marchers against his own men. The president made 4,000 troops available and chided the governor and state for being unable to protect their citizens, a basic function of government. Spider was embedded in Selma this whole time, happily getting overtime pay. On March 21st, the march to Montgomery started. The marchers crossed Edmund Pettus Bridge for the second time. Spider Martin, 20 yards ahead, walked backwards with his camera equipment. This time, they would not turn back. The Birmingham News was prepared this time with a mobile lab. They rented a Dodge motorhome and converted the toilet into a darkroom. A mattress was put on top to give a different elevation to the photographs. It was stocked with plenty of food and whiskey in case state troopers needed a soft bribe to let them park where they wanted. News reporter Tom Langford was able to wiretap the telephone wire along the way, and using an AP wire transmitter, sent Spider's photos to Birmingham. 300 marchers were permitted to be on the road from Selma to Montgomery, even though 3,800 crossed the bridge in Selma. It was a grueling multi-day walk for most people. They would sleep in fields and take breaks along the road during the march. During one of these stops, Spider asked Dr. King why he chose Alabama. "Spider, we chose Alabama because Alabama offered us the best theater, with people like George Wallace, Bull Connor, Al Lingo, Jim Clark," King said. "That's why we chose Alabama." About halfway to Montgomery, King gave a press conference. Spider was right up front when a BBC photographer protested that Spider was in the way. I guess he had trouble seeing over the 5'2" photographer from Hueytown. The two started to fight, and as Spider pulled back his arm, Dr. King grabbed him and told him to stop, that there would not be a fight during the nonviolent march. Dr. King saved that BBC photographer from a sure beatdown. Now, when the march reached Montgomery, they ended at the steps of the Capitol building. Wallace could be seen parting the Venetian blinds and looking at the crowd as a petition was read. Needless to say, Wallace did not come out to accept it. King spoke later, and Spider spent his day taking photos of the speakers, dignitaries, and the crowd. After a while, he felt he had taken enough pictures and sat down on the sidewalk and ate fried chicken while sitting next to singer Joan Baez. It seems like the violence of a month before was over, but at about 3 a.m., he received a call that Mrs. Viola Liuzzo had been murdered, and the reporter wanted photos of her car. Spider refused to go into Lowndes County in the dark. He had seen too much. Viola Liuzzo was a white 39-year-old mother of five. She and Leroy Moten, a 19-year-old black man, left Selma to return to Montgomery to help ferry more marchers back to Selma when four Klansmen saw them. Seeing that a black man was in the front with a white woman, they decided to send a clear message of white supremacy. She was shot and killed instantly. Moten saved himself by pretending to be dead. When Spider got to the scene, troopers refused to let the photographers take a picture of the car and threatened them with violence if they did. Spider set the lens and aperture of his camera, turned his back to the scene, and set his camera on his shoulder as if he were walking away. The timer took the photo for him. He was the only one to get the shot. 3 years at the Birmingham News was enough for Spider, and he left to become a commercial photographer. During his time at the News, Spider won numerous awards, including the Associated Press Awards for Best News Photograph, Best Feature Photograph, and Best Sports Photograph. 2 years after leaving the News and 3 years after the Selma marches, Spider was hired by George C. Wallace to be his photographer for the 1968 presidential campaign. I find it remarkable that the governor, who tried to shut down the marches with violence, would reach out to the photographer whose images turned the nation against Wallace. Spider told him, "I won't vote for you, but I will take your money." The two eventually developed a friendship. Spider enjoyed a successful career as a commercial photographer, including taking my photograph as a gangly preteen on the deck of the USS Alabama. In the late 1990s, Spider started exhibiting his Selma photographs. His business card and stationery at the time proclaimed him the world's greatest photographer. I would have loved to have sat down and had Spider tell me these stories and have him share them with you, but unfortunately, Spider Martin took his own life in 2003. His photos would go on to share the story of Selma with new generations, and they would be used in unexpected ways. The producers of the 2014 movie Selma used Spider's images to recreate scenes. Martin A. Berger, author of Seeing Through Race, A Reinterpretation of Civil Rights Photography, said, "I was struck by how many scenes in the film seemed to have been structured based on Spider Martin's photographs." The Briscoe Center for American History at the University of Texas in Austin purchased his collection of photographs, clippings, and notes from his estate in 2015. While protesters were putting their lives on the line every day just so blacks could enjoy the same rights as whites, it took photographers such as Spider to show the outside world what was happening in Alabama. Dr. Martin Luther King told Spider in 1965, "Spider, we could have marched, we could have protested forever, but if it weren't for guys like you, it would have been for nothing. The whole world saw your pictures. That's why the Voting Rights Act passed." Thanks for listening to this episode of the Alabama Short Stories Podcast. I'm happy to announce that Volume 2 of the Alabama Short Stories book is now available and features stories from Seasons 4 through 6. You can purchase it and Volume 1 online at Amazon.com and other online retailers. If you'd like to support your local bookstore, you can purchase it through bookshop.org, where your purchases will help financially support independent bookstores. You can find links in the show notes and on the website. See you next time at Alabama Short Stories.